The next case on our calendar, 03-888, Jennifer Baker versus David White. Mr. Kennedy.
If it pleases honorable court, my name is Charles Kennedy, and I have the opportunity to represent Jennifer Baker in this cause. We bring before the court an issue dealing with a contract. It's an automobile policy that has an exclusion in it, which the lower courts found to be applicable to deny coverage to a person who was involved in what is commonly called as road rage. The facts are a little interesting because the road rage was that the young man, Mr. White, intended in the parking lot of a local Wendy's to ram into the rear of a motor vehicle. In doing so, he did not know, according to his affidavit, that that automobile was occupied. He did plead, however, to a criminal charge brought against him for felonious assault, which brings us to the language of the contract. This case arose because Jennifer Baker was the passenger in the rear seat of the car struck by Mr. White's truck, and she negotiated a settlement with Mr. White after his insurance carrier, Commercial Union, denied him coverage for the exclusion contained in his business automobile policy. That exclusion reads that this insurance does not apply to bodily injury or property damage extended or intended from the standpoint of the insured. Quite simply, we believe the Supreme Court in the case of Physicians Company versus Watson was correct in the interpretation of the application of this exclusion, which stated that in order for this exclusion to apply, the insurance carrier has to establish that the injury itself was expected or intended. So we have some key words to look at in the contract. First of all, we have the or between the bodily injury and property damage. Then we have the language expected or intended. And we have the language.
Let's talk about expected or intended. Mr. White pled guilty, and the requirement of the case he pled, cause he pled guilty to required knowingly cause. Knowingly cause seems to completely fill the terms of the contract that's intended. Knowingly cause and intended don't seem to have much difference in my mind. How do you explain the difference between those two phrases?
Between knowingly and expected or intended?
Knowingly caused. Don't forget caused in there.
Yes. Knowingly caused means there's a causal connection. Knowingly means some form of knowledge.
So when he pled guilty to knowingly caused, it meant that he didn't know he would cause injury? That's not what I understood the criminal case language to be.
He pled guilty to knowingly cause circumstances which would probably...
No, he knowingly caused injury. That's the language from the statute.
Yes.
Not circumstances, caused injury.
But underlying the causation of the definition of knowingly also is the circumstances, Your Honor. Because, for example, if I'm going
Lost
down...
me.
For example, if I'm driving down the road at 75 miles an hour in the interstate, I'm violating the speed statute. Now, if I hit somebody at that speed, does my insurance policy under this coverage cover me? Well, I think most of us would expect that it did. Although I'm knowingly operating, I can knowingly cause injury. And if I'm charged with going a little faster, let's say I'm going 100 mile an hour, at that point, does my insurance policy cover me?
Did you intentionally ram the car, though, that on the highway?
No, Your Honor. But
that's what we have here, where someone intentionally rammed a car in a parking lot.
Yes, but he did not intentionally cause injury, direct intent to the passenger of that car he did not know. He intended to damage the car. He knowingly caused damage to the car, but the injury itself he didn't knowingly cause.
That's not what he pled guilty to. He didn't plead guilty to knowingly causing injury to a car. He pled guilty to knowingly causing injury to a person. There's a difference there.
Yes, Your Honor.
How do you get around that, like, that plea, that admission, that, that statement by him that he knowingly caused injury to a person? How do you get around that language?
Because if you look under, well, first of all, we have to interpret the language of what extended an intent. If it means knowingly, to the point where mere knowledge of circumstances to an injury to a person, that's sufficient. You're right. But is the language of expected or intended that broad, especially an insurance policy where the insurance company has the obligation to define the policy, the terms? It did not in this case. So it allows the law to do so. The law has to be interpreted against it. Now, granted, if you look at the reason people plead, should that be the only responsibility or the only criteria we look at? For example, it's wholly in the terms of the hands of a prosecutor if a man's running 125 mile an hour and hits somebody, if that's reckless, or it could be felonious assault in a case down the road. Should the insurance company be excluded out for that reason? Or should it be a question of fact for a trier of fact in the civil court? We all know why people plead. If Mr. White had pled no contest and been found guilty, or tried to a jury and been found guilty, would we be here under the same consequences? It's only because...
Well, isn't an individual presumed to intend the consequences of his voluntary act?
Yes, and that's true.
Well, wouldn't one of the consequences of his voluntary act of running into the back end of a vehicle either be to cause damage or injury to persons who may be present there?
The policy says it's the injury itself he's got to have the intent. The injury itself is bodily injury. It's or. It's not separate, Your Honor.
Well, can he pick and choose which vehicles he chooses to ram?
Well, he did. But would it make any difference to coverage on the policy?
If he picked it, then he picked one with an individual in it.
If he knew that individual was there, I agree. If he did not, there should be coverage.
Didn't he follow the car off the highway into the parking lot?
Yes, sir.
How did he
drive in by itself?
Well, the facts are that there was a driver in the motor vehicle, another young man. Jennifer's husband was driving. The two young men, being typically macho, said, let's find out what this man wants, since they didn't know who he was. They got out and approached him.
Certainly should expect that there are people in the car he's going to ram. If it just came in off the highway as he did,
ridiculous. Not if he saw two people come out. He's exit the car.
Then he can assume the car is empty because two people got out?
Again, it goes to his knowledge. Isn't that a question of fact for the trier of fact to decide?
Logical.
Well, any more than a presumption there's somebody in the car. Why couldn't he presume there's one driver?
It's a more likely presumption that there's people still in the car than not.
Without additional knowledge, I disagree, Your Honor. I think it's still a question of fact for the trier of fact. Otherwise, you're interpreting this against the insured and not in favor of the insured, which this exclusion must be interpreted. Now, granted, we're talking about a factual distinction.
Well, the insurance company put that exclusion in the policy to negate this type of activity.
The insurance company, first of all, we have a public policy for intentional act, and we're not really talking about public policy here. Sure, the insurance company put it in there to limit its exclusion, but it's in accordance with the language the Supreme Court said that should be interpreted in 1990, which was very simply that it has to be direct knowledge, direct intent to commit the injury itself.
I don't know how you get any more direct intent than the facts of this case.
Well, the fact of it is he didn't know she was there. For example, the Swanson case.
If that's the case, why did he plead guilty to felonious assault and put something so serious on his record as to say, I knowingly caused physical injury to a person? I mean, doesn't make any sense. If he's trying to get insurance coverage, why would he deliberately enter a plea of guilty? That's not a light charge to carry on your record for the rest of your life.
It's not, Your Honor. It's very serious.
Why didn't he go in and say, I didn't know anyone was in the car, so I may cause injury to the property, but not to the person, and try the case?
As we all know, people plead guilty for various reasons.
So you don't want the insurance company bound by their insured's own admission that I knowingly caused physical injury. And you say that shouldn't bind my insured. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying it shouldn't bind him. That's correct.
Okay.
And the reason is because he pled for a number of reasons dealing with the criminal charge. Maybe he was before a judge that wouldn't accept a no contest plea. Maybe it's before a prosecutor who would say, only you got to plead guilty or I won't negotiate with you. There are a number of reasons people plead. And the fact that he said pled shouldn't affect the ability of someone else who has a direct case against an insurance company if there's coverage. This is a direct lawsuit, by the way, under the statute.
Well, do we insure for intentional acts anyway? I mean, do we buy insurance policies to go out in case I assault someone and then we start assaulting people?
No, Your Honor.
Oh, I'm covered.
That's against public policy.
Well, this is an intentional act, isn't it?
It's an intentional act, but the question is, and this court has held, that not all intentional acts are uninsurable.
We didn't hold that in Gearing, did we?
No, you didn't, because the nature of Gearing was that the very act itself had to have direct intent. Molestation
of
a child.
What could you have more direct intent than what you have here?
Direct intent to cause damage to a car, not to a person. That is a
very
limited distinction.
But you see a distinction between insuring for an intentional act of damage to a vehicle as opposed to injury to a person.
No, Your Honor, I do not.
Well, then help me with that.
Okay. If he knew, had actual direct knowledge, that this automobile was occupied.
Now, let's get away from the distinction there. What I'm talking about is the insurability of an intentional act.
Yes, that's...
You said hypothetically on my example of an assault.
Yes.
We don't insure for intentional acts of assault.
Because a direct intent is there to harm.
Well...
But this is felonious assault where...
Don't,
the, where
now
we
have direct intent of damage to a vehicle.
Yes.
You think you can insure that?
Well, not under this policy, because under bodily injury, direct intent to the automobile is excluded by the policy. But we're talking about bodily injury to a person where the person does not have knowledge that it is occupied.
Thank
it's
you.
It's the element of the intent. And we
just,
look
if
at
I
the
understand you
mind.
Correctly, you're saying that the insurance company in this case can refuse to insure the damage to the car because he deliberately hit the car.
Absolutely.
But not the contents of the car.
That's correct,
because he didn't intend to do damage to the contents of the car, i.e. a person.
I.e. the person. Because it's the way the policy is written, and we're interpreting the language of a policy. If I may have 2 minutes.
If he knew the person was there in the car, then your argument seems to be very simple. If he knew someone was in the car, if that was a fact that was determined,
it's excluded.
Outside the criminal, yeah, then you don't argue. There's no argument that would be excluded.
That's
yeah.
correct, Your Honor. It's excluded. May I have 2 minutes in rebuttal?
Yes, I think more than that. Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, and guests. My name is Robert Johnson, and with my partner, Chris Beckhold, I'm pleased to represent the appellee in this action, Employers Fire Insurance Company. I think after hearing Mr. Kennedy, the parties do not have too much of an argument as to how to frame the issue in this case. Mr. Kennedy concedes this was a road rage issue. He concedes that Mr. White intentionally rammed a motor vehicle which seconds before had been in motion. Therefore, the question for the court is whether the aggressor, in an instance of road rage, having injured a person and having pled guilty to a charge of felonious assault, a felony with a culpable state of knowingly causing injury, may then bind his insurance company to provide liability coverage for his own wrongdoing, notwithstanding the presence of an expected or intended exclusion to that policy. And overwhelmingly, not only common sense, human decency, but all of the prior holdings of this court dictate that the answer to that question is absolutely not.
Counsel, let's break this down so we can focus on exactly why you believe you should win. Let's take out the criminal plea for a moment.
Okay.
Your reading of your policy's language, your client's policy's language, if this gentleman had been angry with the owner of this car, and happened to see it parked in a Wendy's lot and pulled in and rammed it. And it turns out, unbeknownst to him, the evidence is unbeknownst to him, somebody's in the car. Let's make it a child who's, you can't see him from the street. Clearly thinks it's an empty car. Clearly intends to damage the heck out of it. Coverage for the personal injury to the person that is in the car, unbeknownst to your insured, who certainly intended to damage the car.
At an absolute minimum, Your Honor, that's not a summary judgment case on coverage. And as Justice Stratton would say, clearly there is no coverage under those facts for the property damage.
Right. I think understand that. So you won't concede that there would be coverage for the individual that was in the car unbeknownst to your insured?
I think under the current law, Your Honor, it's much more likely that there would be coverage. I'm just saying that you would probably need more facts. And you're more closely analogous, not quite there, but more analogous to Swanson, which the appellants rely on, I think, incorrectly.
All right. So the difference in this case is which, in terms of not getting to a jury, because that's what we're talking about here, right?
Yes, Your Honor. We've
taken this out of the hands of a jury to decide. Is it that because this happened out on the highway and he follows, and we don't know, you know, was he right on the heels or whatever, two people jump out of a car, is it that fact pattern, or is it the criminal plea that means your client wins, in your view?
Your Honor, in my view, the single most dispositive is the criminal plea, pleading right to that crime with a culpable state of knowingly. I'm certainly
without the criminal plea, or if the plea had been no contest, is it a close question on whether or not this is a jury question rather than summary judgment?
I think without the criminal plea on the record we have, it's a very close question, Your Honor. I would say it's a very close question. The court has obviously a very good understanding of the facts on this case, and as Mr. Kennedy stated, this is a vehicle that was traveling down Interstate 275. They're cut off at some point by Mr. White. They pull off the interstate into a Wendy's. It's very close to the interstate. Two people get out of the car. Unfortunately, there were three occupants of it. The occupant in the back seat, I note, did not get out, was still sitting there. Mr. White, unlike the insured in Swanson, who was firing a BB gun from 70 to 100 feet away, apparently rears back, throws his truck into gear, and rams the Baker automobile, and then drives off. And I would agree with, I think, Justice Pfeiffer's point. The most significant fact in the fact pattern is when Mr. White is finally caught, he's not only charged with, but he pleads guilty to. He is not plea bargaining, he just pleads guilty to a charge of felonious assault on the very individual, his victim, the person who was trying to get coverage.
Stop you there. I was one of five justices who voted to allow this case to review it on the merits. I'm not sure now why I did, frankly. what principle of law can we write here, unless it be on the question of how much weight should be given to a plea in criminal court to an insurance coverage case? Is there any question about the law on that? I didn't see it in the briefs, but
There's no question as to what the effect of a plea should be, Your Honor. I think every court in this state that's considered the issue has found that to be dispositive, at least post-gearing, every court that's considered it. The principle that I would ask the court, and the most narrowly tailored way to resolve this case, would be for the court to hold that if you have a guilty plea, or if the court prefers, a criminal conviction, because it should have the same effect if it's fully adjudicated, that a conviction of a crime where the culpable mental state is knowingly or greater in and of itself will trigger the expected or intended exclusion that is found in most personal lines and commercial lines insurance policies these days. And I think that the advantage of that, with the court having chosen to take this case, is that you have a result now where courts don't even have to consider it. The courts post-Gearing, at least, and really even prior to that, with I think one appellate exception that's more than 10 years old, have been unanimous in finding that a knowingly culpable state is sufficient to deny coverage. And they have been consistently doing so based on the exclusion, not on the definition of accident or occurrence, and not on public policy grounds, but they still get the cases.
You said they have been consistently doing it? Who are you referring to?
The appellate courts, Your Honor, and the cases cited in our brief, specifically in addition to this
one. You mean appellate courts in Ohio?
Correct.
How about other jurisdictions, other Supreme Court jurisdictions, to your knowledge?
Your Honor, I've got to concede Ohio's body of law has been so strong on this and so well-developed, at least
national
on the appellate
leaders.
Level. I think national leaders,
you'd say.
We must have a lot of we must have a lot of felons, Your Honor. but yeah, I would have to say that, and that's true in the in addition to the 12th, which is where this case came out of the 7th, 8th, and 9th districts as well.
Would you address the public policy argument about insuring for intentional actions, Mr. Johnson?
Well, Your Honor, it's well developed in this court's jurisdiction, strictly on the Supreme Court level. If this is a direct intent action, then this cannot be insurable, even without the expected or intended exclusion. You never get to the question of whether the exclusion applies. You never get to the question as to whether or not this was an accident. You simply can't get insurance for it. Now, I'm sure the court noticed in the briefing there was a considerable amount of precedent cited, primarily from the appellant, on the issue of employer intentional tort cases. And since you've also got substantial certainty torts, as well as direct intent ones, the court did decide in the Harrison versus Normandy Metals case that unless there is some sort of an exclusion, you can insure for a substantial certainty tort. Now, perhaps getting back to Justice Pfeiffer's point on the criminal conviction and the effect of that, there is actually a footnote one in Harrison, where, and I think this is also dispositive, where the court determined that a direct intent tort is analogous on the criminal level to a purposeful culpable state, whereas substantial certainty is more analogous to the knowingly state. So strictly on the criminal conviction, you've got substantial certainty. Now, since then and before then, the court has consistently held that expected or intended exclusions apply to both if they happen to be present. And what's not noted in the appellant's brief, and we did, is that in the harassing case, there wasn't an exclusion. There was a commercial general liability policy that had it, but the claim was based on an employer's practices policy, which eliminated all of the exclusions. In other words, it was a writing error by the insurance company and they got caught. I raise that point for one reason. The appellant throughout the process in this case has been relying upon Swanson. And in reality, if you read Swanson, for the court to find coverage here in light of that criminal conviction based on Mr. White's guilty plea, you're going to have to reverse Swanson. Because unequivocally, the Swanson opinion says the expected or intended exclusion is going to apply either if you've got direct intent or purposefulness, or if the insured knew that personal injury was substantially certain to occur. That's the language immediately before the holding at the end of that opinion. So Swanson not only doesn't give any relief to the appellants, it actually dictates the direction that this court should find. Now, I would be happy to continue, but unless the court has any questions at this time, I would just simply ask that the court affirm on the bases outlined in the appellee's brief. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Kennedy, you've saved about 2.5 minutes of your time.
Thank you. The lower appellate court made an interesting observation when it said when Mr. White pled guilty to felonious assault with the mental culpability of knowingly, and I quote, the culpable mental state of knowingly caused physical harm required for a conviction of physical assault does not include any intent or expectation, which means we go back to the old review of this court in Harshna versus Normandy Mills that if you compare the tort of intentional down to negligence with the criminal of purposely down to negligence, we have corresponding areas of direct intent is purposeful. Substantially certain to occur is knowingly. If you plead to knowingly, we have a substantial certain to occur. Now, does a conviction for substantially certain to occur include expected or intended act, or are we talking about transferred intent? Intent to hit a vehicle, to damage it, transfer intent to a person inside. Again, I say that's a factual pattern.
Well, is the definition of knowingly in 2901.22, is that relevant to us here? That's a section that defines knowingly, which is part of the act of felonious assault.
Yes, Your Honor, because that establishes the criminal mental culpability that he pled to.
Okay, so a person, he pled to a statute that says he acted knowingly, regardless of his purpose, when he is aware that his conduct will probably cause a certain result or will probably be of certain nature. And I'm putting him instead of a person. He has knowledge of circumstances when he is aware that such circumstances will probably exist. Doesn't that mean that we have to assume that he probably knew there was someone in the car?
We have to assume that he probably knew that the circumstances there may be. But again, that's a question of fact.
Probably exist.
And we're really looking back in hindsight to say if it existed or not, aren't we?
Your argument is that the probably exist should be determined in a civil case.
In a factual basis, depending upon the tort standard of substantially certain to occur, which is expected or intended conduct. Thank you, Your Honors. We
Thank
ask
you.
This court to reverse.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.